We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Welcome back here to 560 WQAM and welcome to the 4 o'clock hour. Greg Likens alongside Troy Stratford in for Hawk and Crowder. Hope everybody had a terrific weekend and appreciate you joining us here on this Monday afternoon. Alex Solano with us as well on the other side of the glass as we continue on. Man, it was an exciting weekend in sports between all of the action that took place Friday night into Saturday. And again, you know, I'm at home Friday night watching some of the summer league action. You mentioned you were watching that game as well. Zion versus RJ Barrett, and late in that contest an earthquake strikes and they have to suspend the game, and then I thought that was going to be the big story of the night.
Yes.
The earthquake and how it affected, you know, sports and life and just a general society. And then next thing you know, it's close to 2 o'clock in the morning and the Kawhi Leonard news breaks. And the Kawhi Leonard news, you know, I don't think everybody gave the Clippers much of a shot. It seemed like it was Lakers or Raptors. Most of the conventional wisdom was one of those two teams. So the Clippers, that was a surprise. But the real stunner was that Paul George was going to be traded there as well. And like, that was just like, whoa, what on earth just happened? So that was crazy. And then you had the Russell Westbrook rumors that, you know, picked up from there throughout the weekend. So Heat fans excited about that. And certainly yesterday, if you're a soccer fan, they called it Championship Sunday. You had the Women's World Cup in the morning into the early afternoon. You had the Copa America final at 4 o'clock and then the Gold Cup final around 9 o'clock. You had all of these different matches to take in. Very entertaining, but we need to focus on the American women. Congratulations.
Yes.
To the U.S. Women's National Team for winning their fourth World Cup title. They've also won it in 91, 99, and now 2015, 2019. They were the runner-ups in 2011. No other team in women's soccer has won more than two World Cups. So they have four. They have distanced themselves once again. Germany's won two of them. And they've also won back-to-back titles. The only other team to do that is Germany. They're the only national team, men's or women's, with more titles than the United States are the Brazilian men with five. Hmm. So, you know, I know they're not playing against the men, but that's impressive as well. During this run, the U.S. women's national team broke the record for most goals in a single FIFA Women's World Cup with 26 of those. In addition to that, if you take a look at what they were able to accomplish, they didn't trail the entire tournament. They outscored their seven opponents 26-3. They never needed a second of extra time. And they led an astounding 442 out of the 630 minutes in which they played. That's 70.2% of the time. 70.2% of the time they had a lead in the tournament. And they never trailed. So the other, you know, almost 30%, they were tied.
Very impressive.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Yes.
Megan Rapinoe ends up going home with a couple of extra trophies. She won the Golden Boot as the top scorer in the tournament, also the Golden Ball as the tournament's top player. And, Troy, what I found fun about this is that not only do they win, but you could tell that there were so many people paying attention to it.
Yes.
And that in the past, you know, people may say, well, I'm not into soccer. They also may say I'm not into women's sports. But this team really got everybody behind it, including yourself. Like, you can describe what you are in terms of a fan. You're not a huge fan of soccer,
I'm not a huge fan. Like, I will watch the World Cup in the big game, but to sit down and actually watch from start to finish, I'll pass on that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have been a couple of times, I mentioned in the past when I was over in Amsterdam, and I really got a gist of how important it is to the different countries over there and the people. And I felt the energy. So I watched yesterday and a spotlight was put on this team because of the president jumping into this and because of the young lady sitting there saying what she had to say about not going to visit the White House if they were to win it. So that put a spotlight on them. And I thought, wow, the pressure that they put on themselves, and they probably didn't feel the pressure. Like, they know how good they are and how confident they are. I, like, got emotional when this thing was coming down to a close. And I just started thinking about how many, and they would show the pictures in the stands, how many young girls were impacted by what they were doing, what they were accomplishing. And it moved me. Like, I was like, I can't believe, I'm by myself now, mind you. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like what is going on here? But I felt a movement at that time, just me sitting there saying, wow, how they are impacting these young girls right now who are at the games with their mom or their dad or whoever. And you could sit there and those little girls, and I'm sure it was little boys as well, but those little girls who they will grow up and tell that story about how they went to that game right there, that match. And ever since then, I'm going to be that soccer player that's going to be great. Say, oh, I'm actually getting choked up a little bit right now.
Yeah, I mean,
it was pretty powerful.
So it was powerful. It was moving. And here's part of what I think banded everybody together, and it was galvanizing for the Americans, is that you had seemingly the rest of the world rooting against us. And that's part of it, too. And so this was a topic of conversation throughout the 30-day tournament, because even in the aftermath of them winning—
Is it because of the show-off?
Well, it's because, so like, they opened the tournament against Thailand, they win 13-0, and then people are criticizing them for running up the score and for celebrating too much on goals, you know, late in that game when they're piling it on. Then there were the political issues you brought up with Rapinoe's interview from, you know, a couple months before the World Cup, in which she said she wouldn't go to the White House. You also have this lawsuit that's hanging over the entire tournament because the U.S. women have sued the U.S. Soccer Federation for equal pay, which we can get to that as well. But then, generally speaking, they have been accused numerous times of being arrogant Americans and, you know, not being within the spirit of the game. I don't know how you want to interpret this, but this was the headline in the Daily Mail, which is a UK publication, after they won yesterday. Quote, "World rolls its eyes as cocky, sore winner U.S. team proclaim their own greatness after winning fourth Women's World Cup." And it goes on to write, I'll read this excerpt real quick. "USA may have won the Women's World Cup, but the nation appears to be the only one celebrating as the team comes under renewed criticism for its arrogance during the tournament. Striker Alex Morgan faced widespread abuse for a notorious tea-drinking action during the team's 2-1 win over England in the semifinal, and the players' celebrations were dubbed excessive during their 13-0 stomping of a far weaker Thailand side. Soon after their World Cup triumph over the Netherlands this evening, the U.S. Soccer Women's National Team's Twitter page posted, 'Dominant, from beginning to end,' and later added, 'Greatness, the biggest stage.' The U.S. team's behavior has caused a backlash on social media, with people claiming the team is not likable and branding them arrogant and smug." So that's from the Daily Mail. This is my interpretation of it, though, Troy, and I'll let you speak as a former professional athlete on arrogance or cockiness or confidence. But my takeaway on this was that nobody in the United States seemed to be bothered by it. This was like England was upset because Alex Morgan did a celebration that was kind of mocking, you know, English culture, I guess.
Right.
But I didn't hear any Americans who were like, oh, I was offended by that. That obviously was a rallying point, though, for the U.S. team because they heard some of the criticism. But at the end of the day, they're saying that the Twitter account said greatness, that they won the World Cup. It's like, well, what are you supposed to say?
You're the best in the world.
Best in the world, not only for this year, but of all time.
Yes.
You look at the history
That's
of the competition. What else would you describe it as? This just sounds like bitterness from the teams, and specifically from an English publication. England lost to the United States in the semifinals. England had a great tournament, but they came up short. And, you know, all along the way, there's been all these stories. They try to create this hoopla surrounding the U.S. team. The bottom line in my book, Troy, and I'm curious to hear what you think about it, is that Team USA was arrogant to a certain degree. They were certainly confident. But I think you can get away with that, and it's justified if you back it up by winning. Right? Like, if you're overconfident or you're arrogant, and then you go out and lose, then that's on you. But if you go out and back it up, somebody needs to shut them up. Otherwise, I think they can be as arrogant as they want to be.
That's the thing. Growing up in this sport and you're competing at a high level, if you're playing against a team that's cocky, they talk a lot of smack, like you want to shut them up. You got to beat them. And if you can't beat them, they have the right to do what they want to do. And that's how I look at it. So I can see other countries on a smaller scale because of the success and the greatness that the New England Patriots have had.
Mm-hmm.
We outsiders hate the Patriots. They're smug. They think they're this. Well, they are. And so when you're not a part of that winning team, it does not come off right. So I could get why they feel the way they feel, but I have no problem with the U.S. Now, the 13-0, 13-0 game, maybe they did pile on at the end with the celebration part. Okay. I think the match is over, like, when you're up 5-0.
Most of the time.
You know.
Yeah.
So maybe a little excess celebrating at that point, but other than that, I'm all right with it.
Yeah, I you know what? I think this has all been blown out of proportion. I think what's more interesting, to your point, where it's kind of the political element involved there. And also, you know, this whole compensation topic to me is more interesting and compelling if you look at it, not just from U.S. Soccer Federation, because it's already been proven that the U.S. Women's National Team, you know, based on who they have to play, and again, the competition's different, but they have been more successful than the men,
yes,
obviously. But also, it's proven, and I'll give you some information. I'm not just going to say this and not have any information to back it up, but they have proven that they can create more revenue than the men as well, yet they're not being compensated the same way.
That's a different story.
Right. Yeah. And so as far as the World Cup is concerned, here, I have an issue with this as well. You've got 24 teams competing in the Women's World Cup in France this year for a share of $30 million in prize money from FIFA. That's 7.5% of what the men's prize money is for the World Cup the year before, $400 million in 2018.
$400 million to $30
million? Yes. And the U.S., in winning the World Cup, is going to split $4 million of those funds. So the winning team earned $4 million. The men last year from France, who won the World Cup for the men, they shared $38 million for the winning team. So, you know, it's about 10 times different. If you look at documents obtained by The Guardian, also a British publication, the U.S. women's national team's contract guarantees a player will receive $3,000 for each qualification game. I'm going to go through this a little bit. Bottom line is a potential grand total of $200,000 each for each player based on what their contracts stipulate if they win the whole World Cup. In contrast, if the U.S. men's national team qualified for the 2018 FIFA World Cup, which they didn't, players would have received $108,000 each had the team won all of their 16 qualifying games, made the World Cup roster, and had won the World Cup. The men's players would have been paid a total of over $1.1 million as compared to $200,000 for the women. So it's that part of it certainly, I don't think sits well. And this is a point I want to make, Troy, is that I don't think that the U.S. women or any of the women in the World Cup should be paid as much as the men in terms of what FIFA is providing, because the men's tournament provides more revenue.
Right.
It just does.
Right.
But,
and if they were to give more money to the women, it would have to come from the pool of money given to...
Well, FIFA's cash reserves reportedly at the end of 2018 stood at $2.74 billion. So it's not like they're hurting for money, FIFA as an entity. But with that being said...
Did you say with a B?
Yeah, with a B. Like the Steve Ballmer B there with the billion.
Yeah.
But here's my point on this, is you can look at the Women's World Cup and you can acknowledge, much like, and this isn't fair, but I you know, draw the comparison, WNBA to NBA. Like the NBA generates a ton more revenue than the WNBA. The Men's World Cup generates more revenue than the Women's World Cup, but the gap is closing. And it's the gap isn't as wide as it once was. Like when the Women's World Cup first started in 91, it was like, we don't know if this is going to work.
Right.
And like, let's just see what happens. But now you've gotten to a point, if you listen to this, the soccer game pay gap exists despite the profitability of the U.S. women's national team. According to the Wall Street Journal, U.S. women's soccer games have generated more revenue for the U.S. Soccer Federation than the U.S. men's games over the last 3 years. And according to Nike, the 2019 women's stadium home jersey is the top-selling soccer jersey, men's or women's, ever sold on Nike.com in one season. So there's so much evidence pointing towards the U.S. women compared to the U.S. men should be paid equally. That's the first part, but that's from the U.S. Soccer Federation. As far as FIFA is concerned, I still think it's a joke that it's such a wide gap.
The gap is too wide.
I'm not saying that the women, based on just the revenue generated, should be paid as much as the men there.
Right.
But the prize money should be worth more.
The game has come a long way
when it comes to the
women's product.
Correct.
So in the beginning, you could see that, but change is going to happen. It's going to take place. I'm not saying like fast, quickly, but it has to change, especially if that sport continues to grow the way it is. And you talk, when it comes to the American women, I think that they have an opportunity here unlike ever before, and not saying it's right, they're going to have to make their money in the sponsorships now. And
it's much like when the Olympic athletes have success,
yeah,
and they've got to capitalize
like
in that
you're
moment.
Not making your money from the event itself. You have to capitalize on your likeness, and hopefully they have good representation and they will get top dollars. That's the way I see it, because all of them should be merchandise, because soccer's the largest growing sport here in America, especially when it comes to the safety of parents having their kids out there playing. They feel like soccer is a very safe game where their kid is not going to get hurt, even though they're going to get hurt because they're kids. But they feel their kids are much safer, and it's the easiest sport to play at that age. So they got to make their money that way.
Yeah.
They have to.
And what I also—
How about the Nike commercial? With the quickness, having it ready to go.
Yeah.
And it was a hell of a commercial.
I mean, yeah, that's one that'll give you goosebumps.
Oh, yeah.
You watch that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool.
If you haven't watched it, you should just Google that.
Check it out.
You got to check it out.
All right, let's take a quick timeout, Troy. We'll come back. We're getting a bunch of texts on this. Kendall Toyota West, Kendall Toyota text line 56022. Much more right after this here on QAM. We're back here on 560 WQAM, a very good Monday afternoon to everyone. Greg Likens alongside Troy Stratford filling in for Hawk and Crowder. Alex Salon on the other side of the glass as we roll on here. Get some texts rolling in. Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line 56022. People talking about the U.S. women's national team. Troy, I got to say, man, I'm really proud of you that you sat down and watched the team play.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and it was such a moving experience for you as well. Because I remember many different conversations we've had where you're like, I'm just not really getting into soccer. And then, of all things, I'm telling you, man, the U.S. women's national soccer team has really, really been, for the most part, a unifying force. I have seen some texts roll in here that people don't like. You know, certain people don't like Rapinoe and, you know, some of the politics and all of that. But overall, the team itself, I feel like everybody has gotten on board. You go back to 99. I remember watching the 99 World Cup win when Brandi Chastain made the clinching penalty kick and ripped her shirt off. And that was such an indelible moment there. And that image, I think, you know, everybody remembers that to a certain degree. And that happened on our turf, you know, out in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
So we hosted that. Now 20 years later.
What was the big controversy about that? Just because she took her shirt off?
Yeah, we 20 years ago, we weren't used to seeing that much
20
skin.
Years ago. Was that long ago?
Yeah, 1999. Oof. Right? Like, at that time, it was like, oh, my gosh. I mean, now, like, you know, you see a woman in a sports bra, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, depending on who it is, I suppose. But, you know, my point is we're used to seeing, like, society has become immune to this idea that you know, people aren't supposed to show skin. Like we see so much more of that in the media, in the TV shows that we consume, the movies we consume, and heck, like anybody who's lived in South Florida, if you go near the beach, I mean, you don't even have to be near the beach. You see, you
know, gas station,
men and women who are, you know, wearing various amounts of clothes and oftentimes not too much during the hot times of the year, which is around the clock here.
Don't get me wrong. I enjoy some of the views.
Some not so much?
Well, some. I'm like, do they have any friends? Or did the friends not see them?
Nobody was going to be honest with them, apparently.
I guess not. No.
There's some people that that you feel like saying something to?
No.
You just leave?
No. To each their own.
Okay. Yeah. We got some people chiming in here. Someone says, I agree with women's soccer, but just because they're women shouldn't be the reason. Male models don't make as much as female models, as an example.
Ooh, very good comeback.
Correct. I think in this case, you can, like, again, I brought up the example of the WNBA versus the NBA. Like, nobody, I know the WNBA players have complained that they're not making more money, but I don't hear anybody saying we should be paid as much as the NBA players, right? Because now the WNBA players, I don't want to speak for them. Maybe they feel differently. But Troy, I think you can look at it from a business standpoint and you can understand right. that the revenue generated from the men's game versus the women's game is, you know, leaps and bounds ahead. So,
but in soccer, it's not.
Well, that's the difference
that's
here.
What they're generating. Something has to be done if that's the case. If the WNBA was generating that kind of dough, mm-hmm. they would have to play it or pay the players so much more money. And that's not the case. So it's that bottom line likeness.
It really is. And so that's why I know that the lawsuit against U.S. Soccer Federation is a gender discrimination lawsuit because the men are making more than the women. But at the end of the day, I'm with you. Like, it's a bottom line business. It doesn't matter, man, woman, doesn't matter.
Who's making the loot?
Whoever it is, if you are the ones who are delivering the goods, then you deserve to be compensated accordingly.
Absolutely.
Okay, we got some other people who are, I guess, arguing this, saying that the women's team gets a salary. They have a completely different pay structure, which is how they wanted it because they negotiate their own CBA. I don't think it's quite that simple. This is one of these situations where these rules have been in place for a long time.
Right.
And the pay structure has been in place for a long time. And they have not kept up with the progress of the women's team as compared to the men's team. And so, again, if we did not have any evidence that the women's team was generating revenue, if we didn't have any evidence that they were popular, that people were paying attention, then I don't think anybody would be rallying around this cause. The bottom line, though, is not only are they successful, but they are generating revenue,
yes.
generating buzz, television ratings, and all of that. And it was somewhat ironic that during the same day you had the U.S. women win the World Cup and the U.S. men could not score against Mexico last night in the final of the Gold Cup. Gold Cup isn't comparable to the World Cup in terms of the stage, but the other part that I know that Megan Rapinoe complained about, and I actually agreed with her on this, Troy, is that yesterday you had the Copa America final and the Gold Cup final the same day as the Women's World Cup. The Men's World Cup would never share the stage with another soccer tournament ever in the history of that tournament. Like, that just doesn't happen. Like, to me, I would compare it to this, and I think it's not a fair comparison because we don't have the same type of sport.
Is she saying that they should have been the only
should have been the only thing should have been the showcase event? The Men's World Cup never shares it with another soccer tournament, God forbid, because that's the only thing. That'd be like if there was a real legitimate women's, like, professional football, like, say, American Football League. If women played that, I know there are some lingerie leagues and stuff, but I'm talking like a real football league, and they played their championship game. And it was the same day as like an NFL playoff game, right? Like,
yeah, you can't.
Because like
that.
The Gold Cup, Copa America, I'm not going to put up there with the World Cup. But can you imagine anything?
The point.
Can you imagine another football game being on Super Bowl Sunday?
No.
Like, this doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So like that is even another example of FIFA, you know, not just the actual pay structure, but also FIFA is like, oh yeah, we didn't think about it. It's like, are you kidding me? You would always
they had to
you would always
that.
Think about it when the men's FIFA World
All right,
Cup.
So here's
is going
my
on.
Question to you. I'm not the diehard or average soccer fan. I didn't know about the other games that was going on, but I knew about the World Cup. Because the United States women were in it.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't that even more that more draw that we're talking about in favor of the women where they have all of these other games that took place on the same day, But the average casual fan like me, like when Tiger's playing, I'm tuning in. I tuned into them. I think that's something to be said. Now, I don't know if it was because it was just the name, the World Cup, and I kind of knew what that stood for. But that says a lot right there that that casual fan was not tuning in to watch the other games, I don't think. I don't think. But I think they were tuning in to watch the women's game, and that speaks volume. That's eyeballs. That's money. That generated a lot of money for whoever advertised during that match. It's a lot. They should be compensated for that.
That may be true, though, in the U.S., right? Because the United States women's national team is very prevalent. They win often. They're the best team in the world, like that, obviously, right? But I would say around the rest of the world, there's probably more interest in the South American. I mean, right, like just in general.
Well, to your point, like if England beat the United States in the semifinal and it was England versus the Netherlands,
I would not have
wouldn't have tuned in.
Right. It was because here in the U.S., it was to watch Megan Rapinoe. It was to watch Alex Morgan. It was to watch some of these players that, you know, the casual fan has heard of and they wanted to tune in and see what the hype was about.
Nice counter.
But to Greg's point, it's just another example of a long list of running examples of FIFA, this governing body of soccer in the world, just not really having that much of an interest. No, right. Like it's not. I don't even think it's that. I think they just don't like. Truthfully, they just don't have too much interest or respect for the women's game. And like I think that is where it needs to change. You know, the fact that the governing body itself does not really respect the game of women as much as they respect the men's. Like I totally get because the text line's flooded with it. The men's game makes more money. I get it. That's a fair point. But at least respect the women as much as you respect the men, and maybe things can start to change. You see the NBA, like, they respect the way that they govern the WNBA. I understand the pay structure, you know, things, women are fighting to change that. But in terms of how much they promote the game, like there's things to be said for how the NBA has structured respecting the WNBA and having the top athletes, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Anthony Day, like the top athletes come out and support the WNBA. And FIFA doesn't do that, clearly, when they're scheduling two other finals on the same day of the Women's World Cup.
And the other point that I've made over this tournament is that you talk to or you read some of the columns from folks who are over there covering the Women's World Cup, and they'll tell you that if you go to the city of Paris, where you know France is hosting this thing, if you weren't already there for the tournament, you would not know that a tournament is taking place. There's no signage. There's nothing advertising or there's no marketing dollars or euros that are being spent to advertise what's going on and provide some promotion for it. But if you went to the 2018 World Cup for the men, which was taking place in Russia,
the whole country knows it.
Everywhere you go. And they said there was more promotional signage in Russia during the 2018 World Cup, promoting the 2022 World Cup in Qatar for the men than there was
to get ready for.
Yeah, promoting the actual Women's World Cup that was taking place in the country. So there's a lot of these
issues. Long way to go.
Now, a lot of people are texting in a lot. I see we got a few of these texts talking about the percentage of the money that the women were getting from FIFA. Somebody says women get 13% of the revenue, men get 9% of the revenue, and all this other stuff. Yeah, that's true. They're getting more percent of the revenue than the men, but guess what? There are also eight less teams in the Women's World Cup than there are for the men. So when you have to break it down 32 ways for the men versus 24 for the women, you know, that doesn't actually make it like they're treating the women better than the men. It's a smaller tournament. Yeah. There are fewer teams involved.
The women got to make their money and endorsements. And
they
all
do.
That. We're going to see a flood of commercials.
And we have already for the likes of Megan Rapinoe and Alex Morgan. Now the question
is: Alex Morgan the girlfriend of the tight end that played with the Eagles?
That's Julie Ertz, who played Zach Ertz's wife
before. So I'm totally mixing them up.
She used to be Julie Johnston, but now then she married Zach Ertz because they were both Stanford athletes and they met at school and then they got married and she changed her name to Ertz. Alex Morgan's married to an MLS professional soccer player.
Servando okay. Carrasco plays for the Galaxy.
Yeah, good luck to us. Yeah.
I call him Servando Carrasco. But, you know, so, you know, he goes all by a few different
all
names.
All right, Solano.
I got you guys.
Yeah, and then Megan Rapinoe, her partner is Sue Bird, the WNBA player. Talk about a little crossover there in terms of we're talking about the WNBA. And yeah, that's her partner there. So, but I guess my
I wonder if anyone's going. We're not going political. Going to the White House, though.
It will
just
be
a side note.
It will be a story whenever.
Oh, it will be a story
that happens or doesn't happen for sure. Yeah. Okay, we got a lot of people are into this texting in Kendall Toyota West Kendall Toyota text line 56022, which is terrific. All right, Troy, there's something that we've been kind of delaying here. But I want to get down to business. You did a list of predictions for NBA free agency, and I was going to wait to revisit this until we had all of the players that you predicted where they were going to land make their decisions. And with Kawhi Leonard making his decision late Friday into Saturday morning, we now can complete your list. So are you ready to review these when we come back?
I guess. You know, I think I deserve a mulligan on this. I really do because my prediction was pre-injury, and the injury changed everything.
What injury?
Durant.
No, it wasn't.
It was?
No, I talked to you. It was two Fridays ago.
I tried.
Yeah, okay. We'll come back. We'll review. If you haven't heard him, we'll tell you what Troy's predictions were. We'll get his reaction. That's next here on QAM. We're back here on 560 WQAM. Greg Likens alongside Troy Stratford in for Hawk and Crowder. Alex Solano with us as well as we continue on here. Troy, it was, I think, two Fridays ago. It was a couple of Fridays ago. You were nice enough to join me on the show when I was on QAM from 6 to 10. Mm-hmm. And we had a fun conversation, as we always do. And you always pride yourself on your predictions, sports predictions primarily. I don't know about I've only really asked you about your predictions in sports. I don't know if you go outside of that. I think at times we've done maybe like Grammy Awards and, you know, the Oscars, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, my specialty is sports.
But sports is your thing. And you're always quick to brag about, you know, how you hit on this and hit on that and all this other stuff. However,
Hey, we've been on since Tiger won?
We have not been on since Tiger won.
Oh, just another one.
Tiger's back?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the deal is every time Troy makes a prediction, it is inevitably wrong. Like you have this uncanny ability of one bragging about your ability to make accurate predictions, but then being inaccurate.
I just gave you Tiger Woods, another green jacket.
You just said like generally Tiger Woods was going to be back. And
No. Generally,
yeah.
When everyone was off the wagon, no, I still supported him. And guaranteed it was going
to happen.
And it
took you how many years to make that happen?
I don't know, 5, 6, 7. Yeah,
it's a long time to wait for your prediction to hit. You ready to review? Solana, did you know of Troy's predictions?
I think I might have been here for a couple of them, but I don't remember you going through all of them. So, no, I'm not aware. I just know he didn't have KD to the Nets. That's all I know.
Okay. So
really nobody did.
I asked him 6 players. If he could identify, because I thought this may give us an indication one way or the other. You ready to go down the list?
Okay, let's see what I said.
Klay Thompson, Troy Stratford predicted.
This was a reach.
No. You actually.
Oh, I switched this one.
You switched it.
Yes.
And for the record, you said Klay Thompson was going to go to the Golden State Warriors, stay home.
Correct.
And that's exactly what he did.
True.
One for one.
Yeah.
Kemba Walker. You predicted he would sign with the Boston Celtics, yeah. And he did. Two for two. Well, hopefully we have another sound effect because it doesn't get any better than this. The third guy I asked you about, Jimmy Butler. You predicted he would stay with the Philadelphia 76ers.
Now, you see, no one You can't name one person outside of that Heat organization that even thought of that.
That Jimmy Butler would become a member of the Miami Heat.
Yes. So I get a mulligan on that.
Oh, okay.
Because it was just so obscure. It was like out of the box. It was, you know.
Well, I mean, I will say this. The Heat landed Jimmy Butler despite having no cap space.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is impressive.
Yeah. So leading up.
And in the process got rid of that albatross of a contract and Hassan Whiteside.
You a fan of getting rid of Whiteside?
Oh, yeah. It was about time. I think it's. I mean, we could spend a long time.
You
discussing
could spend a whole segment on
the different elements of that because yes. You know when he played and was given the proper minutes, he was productive. But you know, lackluster effort. Eric Spoelstra clearly wasn't a fan. So there's a lot of different.
I definitely was not a fan.
Mm. So Jimmy Butler, you had yes. him go to the 76ers. You're asking for a mulligan on that.
Yes.
Okay. Kyrie Irving was the next guy. You predicted Kyrie Irving would sign with the Los Angeles Lakers.
Oh, what a loser!
And, yeah, I did. I thought he was going to go rejoin LeBron.
Well, guess what? If the Lakers had taken your advice from earlier in the show, if they would have just gone after Kyrie to begin with, maybe he would have reconsidered because he went to the Brooklyn Nets, but they're holding out for Kawhi Leonard.
They were holding out for Kawhi.
And guess what? Then that doesn't work out, and they
I
give
wish
$15
Kawhi
million
just
dollars
let
to Danny
them
Green.
Know up front from day one, hey, I'm not going to your team, as opposed to leaving them hanging and then like screwing Kyrie going to the Lakers and me having a correct prediction.
That's one way to spin it. It's all about you and your predictions, apparently. Kevin Durant was the next guy I asked you about, and you said he would join your New York Knicks.
Oh, what a loser!
I thought I just said New York.
Uh-uh.
No?
So the Knicks.
Put the Knicks on there.
Of course, Kyrie and Kevin Durant are now with the Brooklyn Nets. And you ready for the last one?
The last one, though. Do I? Oh, wow. I thought I had this one.
Kawhi Leonard, you yes. predicted he would return to the Raptors on a one-year deal.
Yes.
Oh, what a loser!
So to recap, I asked you about six players, and you went 2 for 6. 33% is what you shot there. A little better than Russell Westbrook's career three-point percentage.
If I'm shooting threes, I'm all right.
Yes,
I'm making
that's
like
true.
1 point, I mean, $140 million over 4 years if I'm shooting 33%.
I don't know if I go that far.
6 years.
You got to bring something else to the table besides just being able to shoot 33%.
I play on the defensive end also.
Yeah, great defender, especially if we're talking about LeBron James.
See, I'm a defender. I'm all about shutting down my guy.
Excellent defender.
Excellent.
Mm, okay. So any last words on these predictions? Because you've become infamous. I mean, basically, when I saw this list, when I compiled it after talking to you about it, I mean, you got two right, but I was convinced that all of them would be wrong, and so I was just jotting down whatever the opposite would be of all of those predictions.
So you went.
I mean, I didn't make any predictions, but I just for my own state of mind, I was like, okay, now I'm expecting Klay Thompson won't go to the Warriors because that's what Troy said.
That Kemba Walker one, though, I got to get my hat off to Troy. Like, that solid prediction. Not many people had that.
I was reading the rumors on
that. It was
that
a solid prediction, except that, like, everybody was saying, well, now that Kyrie's leaving, they're going to get Kemba Walker.
You know, him playing in Charlotte all like those years.
You know, I'd like to give you credit, too, but the timing of our interview wasn't that. You know, it wasn't like pre-Kemba Walker rumors.
Right,
like,
it
was actually like the day that Woj was like, yeah, it looks like on Sunday he's going to sign with the Celtics. So Solano was trying to.
I don't know if it went that far.
That was an olive branch, and I just knocked it out of his hand.
I tried, Troy.
Thanks. Appreciate the effort.
Mm.
Solano.
Right. Troy, everybody's pumped up about the possibility of Russell Westbrook landing with the Miami Heat. When we come back, we will refresh that conversation, tell you the latest of what the reports are saying out there nationally about his potential availability. That's next here on QAM.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof?
Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.